السلام عليكم. انا جيتو وريني
Well, your question is, as old as the question of Nachiketas, as old as the question that was started by the Vedic rishis, what exactly is the self or the inner self? There was a young child, perhaps of your age, who went to his father and said, "Father, teach me what is the reality." Father said, "Son, go to the forests and meditate for 12 years and come back and tell me what you find." The son went into the forest, lived there, stayed there, meditated there, and then came back to say, "Father, I have found the supreme reality." Father said, "What is it, son?" And the son, whose name was Bhrigu, he said, "Father, matter is reality. The body is reality." And the father said, "Fine, son, you have made a great discovery. But go back to the forest, meditate for 12 years again." And so it happened, after 12 years he returns, this time saying, "It is the life which is real. The real, greatest reality is life, not body. Body, after all, it lives for a few years and it dies. Because maybe he has seen in these 12 years that his body has withered, it has become aged, it has got some problems. So then maybe he said, no, life is eternal, not body." So he comes to his son, his father, and says that, "Father, life is the eternal." The father says, "You have done a good job. But go back for another 12 years. So the son goes back to the forest for 12 years. And returns saying, "Father, is the mind which is the eternal, is the mind which is the supreme reality, is the mind which is the self?" Then father said, "You have found something important, but again you go back." So for the fourth time he was asked to go back, and Bhrigu went back to the forest. This time when he comes after 12 years, he says, "Sir, father, the supreme reality is silence, silence of the soul. The supreme reality is silent Brahman." Then father said, "Yes, my son Bhrigu, that is your innermost self, the supreme reality. That self which is not the body, that self which is not the life, that self which is not mind. Then you will see the fourth self is called the inner self. And in India, we call that the Atman, or the soul. So when you understand by the word the inner self, There is behind all this mind, body and life, there is the Atman, the eternal divine spark in every man, in every human being, in every living object in this world. So that the divine spark inside is the inner self. And it is that self which needs to be realized. Because you will see, when Bhrigu was asked to go to forest for 12 years, it's not just a question of meditating for 12 years, but it is a question of maturing. You see, in life one matures. You're all young students now. For you, you think the body is the reality. If you say, "Who are you?" I say, "I am so and so." But who is that so and so? I say, "I am this, I am the body, don't you look at me. My height is this, my weight is this, my dress is this, my hairstyle is this." And when you look into the mirror, you say, "Well, this is me." But then as you grow up, then you lose interest in the body. Then you say, life, ambition, you know, I have to achieve things. When you will grow up, you will see that you have to really achieve some status, some job, something in life. That means the second stage of life, where your body is okay, you go well-dressed, fine. But you don't spend that energy and consciousness in looking after the body. But then as you grow up again, you are in your mid-40s, around that time you will see even life. You see, I have had children, I have had bank balance, I have had my jobs, I am well established, I am a director, I am so and so. But still you feel that I am not this. Then your ideas, your religion, your thoughts, your mind, that becomes the center of your life. But perhaps when you reach the 4th 12 years, that means when you are almost around 60, normally we say 60, but you can do it earlier. By then you would have shed off the importance of body, of life, of mind. Then you see, what is life? I have seen all this. Then there is something that starts telling you, all this will fade away. But one thing that will not fade away is the soul. All these things will die and go, but one thing that is eternal is the soul. And when you get that kind of an urge, you will see in your own life, you will get that urge. And some people get that urge very early in life. Some people never get it, unfortunately. Because there's so much lost in their life, in their mind, in their body, that you think the body is reality, my wife, my children, my bank, my house, my... And people can spend the rest of their lives in that. But those who have a little bit of the blessings of a guru, those who are touched by a kind of a divine grace, if I can say, you will realize. In fact, it's good you asked me, because when I was young, a little older than you, the mother had once told me some such thing. He said, human beings are born, they grow up, they get educated, they get into jobs. Sometimes somebody from within says, "I'm here, look at me." And that means the soul. Which says, "I am also there, it's not just your body, just not just your job, it's not just your appointment." But mother says, that person comes out and says, mother was explaining this in French, so she's told me, it comes and says, "Voilà, je suis." Je suis, I am, here am I. Look at me. But then we have no time. We are busy with our jobs, we are busy with our appointments, we are busy with our external parties, we are busy with our pubs, we are busy with our cinema. So we tell this person inside, keep quiet. That voice is very thin voice which says, I am there. But we snub it. Says, after all, let me finish this appointment. Let me finish this job. Let me finish this. And then by then, you are old. 60s. And then your principal comes and says, Miss, your age is over. You have to retire. So when you retire, then it's over. That's the nice time. Now that I'm retired, I can now go to that inner voice and says, well, dear friend, once you called me, now I have all the time for you. Then you start going to Dakshineshwar. Then you start going to the Birla Mandir. Then you go to this place. You do the pujas. You go to Himalayas. You do the four dhams. Because you say, now I'm all free, I can give all my time to God. But then, mother asked the question, you can go to Dakshineshwar, you can go to Chardham, you can go to any temple. These are not all her words, I'm just explaining. Please mind you, don't quote me. He said, but when you go to Dakshineshwar or when you go to any Chardham, what do you give to God? Because you have anything, any body energies? No. With all due respects, you see the front row people, you are the young ones with all the body energy. We don't have energies. So mother told, body cannot give, is all retired, full of ailments. Backache, frontache, BP, sugar, this, that. And your vital energies, can we really take up some really challenging work at this time and say, I'll do it? You may have a lot of inspiration. But then after a while, you know, we don't have the energy like the young people. If they say, no sir, we will do it, you know, night and day and night you work. And the mind, it may have some thoughts and ideas. But by then what happens? The mind becomes extremely, what we call, fossilized. What I think is right, what you think is wrong, is a fossilization. I'll not change my mind. So then she says, what can you give to the Divine? Shudhu Dakshineshwara gele to hoy na. You can spend 100 rupees by taxi, maybe it's more now. What do you do at Dakshineshwara? You go to Sri Ramakrishna's room. Thakur ekhane bichana chilo, Thakur ekhane boshten, Thakur ekhane korten. You just recollect. Then there's a temple beside. The Thakur ekhane ashten, ei temple e puja korten. That much. What happens to you? Do you see the deity, the Kalima, and then you get inspired? It's more a historic event for us. Okanka Pujaram, elders Bolman, ei Thakur, ei Chobite Chilen, Thakur ekhane Vivekananda Sangha Deta Hoyeche, Thakur ekhane Chilen. So we go to renew our history because within us we have become empty. So the mother concluded saying, that is why spirituality must be practiced when you are young. Shat bochorer pore ami jabo spiritual person hote jabo asambhav. Because when you are 60 and plus and retired, as normally the doctors say, you know, panchar bochor pore sugar ekta kom korte hoy. Not for the Bengalis, it's for the non-Bengalis. Bengalis can eat all your life. You have the great privilege. So doctors say this after 50, no sweets. Doctors say this after 40, no, don't do that. But spirituality says, after 60, no spirituality is possible. If you want to lead a spiritual life, you have to do it when you are of that age. When you started asking that question, That's the sign. What is this inner being? If that question can come to you, little young lady, you pursue that. You don't just ask me for my answers, but you try to seek the answer within yourself. So it's a long story, but it was a lovely question. So I gave you a long reply. I hope you understand that. Yes, next.
Sir, you said that God is within everyone. So we look at God, modern people look at God as someone just as a model to follow. So my question is, look at me as God inside. So it's not a human.
Can you explain? I couldn't get the mic is too loud for you.
God is there in?
Huh?
God is also there.
In Bin Laden. Oh, Bin Laden. Okay, good. Is there in Bin Laden and in Bush. So what's the question now?
So is God in those cases a terrorist? Is God in those cases a terrorist or a thief?
Oh, is he a terrorist? Okay, good. A very practical question. Yes? God is terrorist, God is Hitler, God is Mussolini, God is everything. God himself is Ravan, and God is Sri Ram and Sri Krishna. Because one thing you remember, little young friend, that this entire universe is God himself. In my body, for example, in your body, in everybody's body, we have different organs. We have heart, we have lungs, we have a stomach, and we have intestines which deal with the dirty stuff. So can we disown the intestine and say, hey, you're carrying the muck, so you're not in my body. My heart is good because the pure thing supplies blood. My lungs are good because it's air, oxygen. But my intestines are dirty because there's all the shit there. So would you like to take the intestines and throw them out? You cannot. When I say I have a body, there's the intestine, there's the heart, there's the mind, there's everything. Similarly, this entire world is nothing but him. There can be millions of Bin Laden, there can be millions of Bushes, there can be millions of Obamas. But it's all within the body of the Divine. Therefore, we cannot say God is terrorist or not terrorist. He is, in one way, everything, if you want to look at that way. Now, from your question, there's a different angle. I can see that. You see, God is not a person that you look up to as a model. That's the first thing you got wrong. God is not a hero that you paste his photograph in your bedroom and say, hi God, how are you? That is what religion has done. It has pasted the picture of God on your temple doors, in your calendars, and thinking, there is God. But basically what I have been telling you, in spirituality, you go for the divine within. So the model of the divine is inside you. And there, as you said rightly, he is there within Bin Laden too. But God has got many forms, many rupa, as we say. In the small book, The Mother, written by Sri Aurobindo, I think it will be wrong of me to ask the audience how many have read the Mother, because last time I asked such questions and it was embarrassing. In that book, the Mother, Sri Aurobindo writes that the Divine has four aspects. The Divine, he says, is Maheshwari, wisdom. The Divine is Mahakali, power. The Divine is Mahalakshmi, or what you would say Mahalokhi. She is all harmony and beauty. The Divine is Mahasaraswati, all perfection. So the Divine works in the world through these four aspects. So when he is Mahakali, he destroys the world for the good of the world. So if you see in Bin Laden, if you see in X, if you see in Y, destruction, don't confuse. God is not all that goody-goody chap. He is not a good student, he is not a good boy. That's what is our problem when we think of God. We say, oh, it must be all good. That is why the questions come to us. If God is all good, why this evil? If God is all beauty, why this ugliness? So we make a contrast because we have put into the shelf of God everything all goody-goody. But God manifests according to the evolution of mankind. At present we are in a stage of evolution which is stuck up in the level of the mind and the ego. And because we are mental creatures, we cannot see the whole truth. We have to divide things and see things. That is why it's a kind of a very divided consciousness. So there is always conflict, one against the other. You see, for example, when you take cricket, when you play cricket, you play Pakistan, India plays Pakistan, India plays Sri Lanka, India plays XYZ. Now what happens? You say I'm the side of India. But if the opposite team is, say, from, say, let's say, not the cricket, your great football. You recently seen the European football. Who were the champions? Spain. So, did you see the final of the Spain? Spain versus Germany? The final, did you all watch that? What time was it at midnight? You saw all that. So imagine, if I were to tell you friends, a little young students of Sri Aurobindo Institute of Education, that tomorrow at 12:30 there is a World Cup match between Spain and Mohun Bagan, would you go and see the match? Because Mohun Bagan has not come up to that level, but as a lottery I picked up and said, we all know that if Spain and Mohun Bagan is a match, is not worth seeing. Because there will be 120 goals against Mohun Bagan. So you say, what's the word that 12:30 I had to wake up and see such a third class match? But Germany versus Spain, yeah, I think that's wonderful. They are equally good. So let us see who's better. So in this world also, God plays the same game. If he has Bush, he has equally a strong Bin Laden. So this is what is called the fight of the forces. Equal forces, good and bad. But both of them are battling. But we don't know who is bad. You have been told that Bin Laden is bad and you think he is a terrorist. But if I were to tell you Bush is a greater terrorist, think it over, I'm not lying. What he is doing to the whole world. If Bin Laden destroyed that two Twin Towers, but I would say Bush has destroyed a whole culture in Iraq. He has destroyed priceless museums, destroyed thousands of young lives, destroyed a whole culture. Now tell me, who is a greater terrorist? So you see, we should not label that he is a terrorist and Bush is a good guy. I'm not taking sides, but I'm just explaining to you philosophically that we have labels, but both can be good, both can be bad, both can be good and bad. So it is not the question of looking at God as somebody outside, but God will come to that level where all is beautiful when you and me become spiritual. Because we are not ready that the world is like this. And the last thing I would add before I end up with this question is, the world, have you seen a potter making a pot any time? What does he do? First he brings the mud. He puts a lump of clay, puts it on the wheel. Then turns the wheel very fast. But in the beginning, before he put the mud on the wheel, what does he do? He prepares it, stamping on that. You know, stamps with his feet, hits it hard. Because that's a solid mud, he has to make it soft mud. Kevan kora kora. He hits it with his feet. He takes a stick and beats it. Then it becomes moldable, soft. And then it is ready to come on the wheel. And even there, if you have seen closely, in the beginning he taps it with a little wooden hammer. Then again makes it softer. Then he will start playing with his fingers and suddenly a beautiful form comes. And even there in the end, he will take a little stick, make beautiful designs, and then quietly takes it and puts it aside. But in the beginning, if you want to see that lump of clay, could you ever imagine the beautiful vase that would come out of that? If that vase had come out, what did it do? There were stages of preparation. Beginning he had to hit it. Tarpore he just softly put his hands. Then he just softly does it with his fingertips. Delicate touches. Similarly, God is doing with us. We are in that stage of the rough mud. So we have to be beaten. That beating is also being done by the divine. Amra bhavi, beating is sorrow, beating is suffering. But he is there to mold this whole of human race into the soft clay. And then this is called evolution. And when the soft clay comes, a beautiful vase comes, that vase, when it is put in the kiln, comes out as a wonderful vase in which you put flowers. That wonderful vase of human civilization or evolution is called Superman. That is the finished product of evolution. So Superman is nothing but the finished product of evolution. Just like the vase is the finished product of that terrible mud. So that is how Sri Aurobindo says, we are in the middle now. We have not yet become, maybe we have just been put on the wheel. He is sometimes giving us hard blows, sometimes soft blows. But he has started the wheel very fast. That means evolution has begun very fast. And who is the potter? The potter is the avatar. It is he who comes and churns it. Wheel after some time it becomes slow. There is Sri Krishna, there is Sri Ram, there is Sri Krishna. And then a man comes called Sri Ramakrishna. The wheel had become slow. Evolution was slow. Then the potter called Sri Ramakrishna, he immediately makes this very fast. So the wheel starts moving. So that there is a new evolution beginning to form. So when the wheel moves fast, then the world changes very fast. People are, you know, surprised, what's happening? Things are changing so fast. There's computer, there's aeroplane, there's this, there's dynamics. And that's because somebody called Sri Ramakrishna, he moved it fast. Long, long back there's somebody called Christ, who had again come to move the wheel fast. But because of the human tamas, human ignorance, human unwillingness to change, each time an avatar comes, Christ had great 12 apostles. But then it becomes diluted. Sri Ramakrishna had great disciples. Then it becomes diluted. So the purpose of the coming of the avatars is to renew this motion of evolution. Make it fast. And then each time an avatar comes, the initial movement is so fast that we human beings, some of us suffer, some of us are gained, some of us are thrown outside the wheel, some parts of the mud are thrown out. But that's what is an avatar. He doesn't come to sit at Dakshineshwar giving little talks. But he is a solid potter who takes the whole world and wheels it so that humanity moves faster. And Sri Aurobindo and the mother are those great supramental potters who have now seen what Sri Ramakrishna has put on the wheel, the great mud. He has started the motion and Sri Aurobindo has started giving the pot a new form. That form, he says, is the supramental. And that's what he has told us, that the work is being done. All this technology, all your mobiles, all your telephones, all the speed, it is nothing but the speed of the wheeling that the potter has given the speed to. So that's why, friend, you have a very deep question, but you can see it's not such a simple answer. You have to look at it broadly, understand it in a different manner. Yeah.
Any other questions?
I think this young man sitting there, he has some questions. No, he's behind you. You wanted to have some questions, yeah? Not now. Or after he is your show? Yeah.
Sir, a human being must work harder. That is the home. What is the meaning of home?
What's the meaning of home? Well, we have to go back to the Vedas again. Om, as the mother said, is a signature of the Lord. You see, people advertise when you go to an agency where you book your tickets, flight, air flight tickets. There used to be beautiful posters with Om, 1,000 meanings. But you ask him, what are the 1,000 meanings? Nobody can say that. But it only means that it is beyond any meaning. It is a source of all dhvani. Now, I can explain a few things, not 1,000 meanings, but the meaning, the one central meaning. You see, there are different ways of looking at this, the creation of the world. One theory tells us that the creation began as a vibration, what we call Nada Brahman. So the first vibration that was brought out from Brahman, and that vibration is nothing but what we understand as Shakti, the power. But it is that vibration which rolls on and on and on. But when that rolls on at mid stages, it crystallizes into different forms. And the last form that the same vibration takes is that of matter. So it is said all has begun with the sound of Om. And then very interestingly, the mother told us about Savitri. And I don't know, since the last time I told you 6 months back to read Savitri, if anyone has started reading Savitri. But she has revealed that when you read aloud Savitri, all the sounds of the words of Savitri will lead you to the word Om. Not the word Om, but to the Dvani. Because Om is not just saying O and M. You chant that and you see there is a vibration that comes right from your navel. You should not chant Om just by your throat. It's a voice that starts from the stomach. It comes to the lungs. Then it comes to the mind. So that is why we call Om as A, U and Ma. Ma is the physical. The U is the subtle. And then the A is the transcendental. So Om represents the three aspects of the divine, the transcendental, the universal and the individual. That's why Om is such a, it's not just sacred because of its Hinduism. But those who have practiced Om will know it. In fact, recently I was reading the mother telling us that if you are not well, physically or emotionally or mentally, she says, chant the word Om. She says, all your pain and suffering and sorrow will vanish. But you must know how to do it. That's what I said, you have to chant, you don't just say Om, 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 Om. And unfortunately, in Bengali, the little Bengali I know, we say in Bengali, Ong, O-N-G. There is, because of the language twist, we have lost the original O-U-M. In Puja Shrome, I'm recovering Ong. So there's an end of O-N-G. But this word is A-U-M, Om. So we have to start the mantra from below. When you say Ah, it is from here. I'm sorry, I think I put the reverse thing. Ah is below. So when you say Ah, U and Ma. So when you see last, the Ma is not even uttered, your lips are closed. But you only get the reverberations of in the mind. So that is where we are reaching the subtle physical beyond. And therefore she said, practice that. And in fact, for meditation, she said, just sit quietly, close your eyes, and just keep chanting Om. There are 101 different ways of meditation. But what we want to do with other systems of meditation is quietness of the mind, peace of the mind. But Mother and Sri Aurobindo do not look for the peace of the mind. They ask you to go to the inner self, as that young lady was asking me. How do you go to the inner self? So the mother would say, sit comfortably. You don't have to sit cross-legged, please remember. Our yoga says, sit in a Padmasana. We can't. You can. Those who can, well. Those who can't, good enough. So sit comfortably. So that your body doesn't have to move and say, hey, I'm better, theek nahi. Body must be comfortable. Then close your eyes and just chant within or loud. She says, as you chant, you will see in front of you opening of a tunnel. A tunnel opens up, but as you chant, you will go through the tunnel. It may take you a long time, do not be afraid of. Sometimes it's a dark tunnel, sometimes it's a light tunnel. But she says, keep going through the tunnel, and then at the end of the tunnel, you come to some light. And that light is the beginning of the inner self. young lady, you're not listening to me. The inner self is there at the end of the tunnel. So you see, she has given you the path also, and the path is through Om. So Om is not just a cultural word. It is a spiritual basis of creation and of again finding out the source, the creator. Because when I find out my inner self, the Atman, he is nothing but the Brahman. So Om is that way a ladder, a double ladder, from by which Brahman has descended into matter, and by which from matter we can go back to Brahman. So that's why it has a tremendous power. Those who can really practice it, you can see, even if you want the peace of mind, you just sit quietly and keep chanting Om. We have the mother's own voice in Om, and those who have heard her, they say, we just can't describe how very powerful it is. Because you see, Om, how is it that our Indian great rishis have caught this word and repeated it for thousands of years? It's not a word that we have invented yesterday or 100 years back or 200 years back. For almost 15 to 20,000 years, millions of people have uttered this word Om. So what has happened? We have put all our aspiration into the single word. Every puja, every function, everything begins with an Om. So you have marriages, you have birthdays, you have this, you have sadhana, you go to the temple, everywhere Om. So that means all our life's aspirations have been added into the word Om. And for millions, for thousands of years, millions of people have uttered that word Om. So now Om is packed with the aspiration of humanity. And therefore, and the reply also comes to us from the Divine, oftentimes through the word Om. In fact, in one of our experiences in the 1960s, Mother recounts that one day she saw wave after wave of vibrations were coming out. She says, I could see on the universal level tremendous waves of vibration. And then at the end of that, there was the word love, the divine love. And this love is again a manifestation of that word Om. So it's because of its tremendous significance, those of you who know about the Matri Mandir at Auroville, and that's one thing I would recommend all of you sitting here, if you have not seen Matri Mandir, take the earliest chance to come to Auroville. And I could recommend you a leave letter to the chairman of this institute, the vice chairman and the principal. It's a thing that you must all see. It is not the seventh wonder of the world, it's the tenth wonder of the world. Supremely beautiful. And at the basis of this Matri Mandir, when it was inaugurated in 1971, when the foundation was laid, on a granite stone, Mother wrote the word Om. Not word, the symbol Om. And then she signed below it. So you can see a new spiritual world that she wanted to give birth to in Auroville. She has laid it on the granite stone with the symbol Om. So the world of spirituality is all based on the single word Om. And then we understood the immense importance of the word. So friends, I do not know all the thousand names, but the little that I know, I think I have told you, that is the importance of Om, the utility of Om. It can cure your sickness, it can cure your mental imbalance, your worry, your anxiety. We don't have to go for any other mantras. Lot of gurus say, I initiate you with this mantra, Don't bother. Our Vedic rishis have given us the greatest mantra, Om. That's enough. But practice it, it's enough. If you don't practice, then you look for a mantra, initiation from this guru and that guru. Well, it's all up to you. But we are given from our Indian culture. Even now, even I've heard the Westerners, I used to go to Germany and France and Italy, even they start their meditations with the chanting of Om. And they are taken to that original Om, you know, and sometimes beautiful voices are there on the mic. Even this starts from the stomach, it says Om. And then you can see the, almost a gong of a bell, you know, that goes out. Now when you see the bell, when you hear the bell, it reverberates. So Om well chanted reverberates in the atmosphere. And then you will see immediately the atmosphere is so dense, you will like to meditate. In fact, I would tell Dilipta and others to really take up chanting of this Om with the students. In the morning at sea, we have got a beautiful prayer given by the mother, student prayer to the students, make up as the hero warriors. But they don't be bad, they need to start the whole thing with the chanting of Om. That will make the atmosphere wonderful. That's it, thank you. Well, sir, I'm sorry. I think it's beyond my present ken of consciousness. Because to explain that, I have to take up Shravanda's Gayatri Mantra, Savitri Mantra. Because what has been given to us as Gayatri Mantra, Shravanda has updated that as Savitri Mantra. And this is something that we should do, take up together. Maybe Dilipda, who is a greater exponent in this philosophy, could explain better. But for the present, you please excuse me because that will take us too far into the explanation. Because Gayatri and Savitri, because you see, Gayatri has brought us to the present evolution. But now Sri Aurobindo has replaced that with Savitri Mantra, which will take us to the supramental world. So these two have to be combined. Many of you may not know the Savitri Mantra, but I'll not get into that dangerous waters, because if we get in, we will drown today, and I don't want these youngsters to feel fidgety. We'll take it up some other time.
I think the best would be if the questions are yet in the context of this talk, that would be the best. Thank you very much.
Yet, within the mentalized world, it is very much narrow and we can know this. Could you tell us about how to overcome that problem?
Just repeat the last sentence.
They are materialized world.
Mentalized world.
And yet, profits the ideas of Swarupananda Maharaj.
Well, I think the question, if I understand rightly, is that, you know, often we have ideas but we do not practice them, and most of us who have taken to Sri Aurobindo and the mother have mentalized their teachings and yet profess perhaps as their devotees. Am I right? Is this the question? Well, if that's the question, well, there are stages of that. Well, the stages are that first of all, let's have an idea. Because you see, it is actually the ideal that really guides us in life, guides us a new, gives us a new direction. So, if you have no ideal in life, as mother would say, and a life without a name is a useless life. So, if you are there without an ideal and then want to follow the general collectivity of just being born, get a job, go to job, come back from home, come back home, and then you have children, and then say, what's the ideal in your life? Ishu na kalke job korto beka tarpor you have to become the director. Is it that you want to climb the ladder of your job? Is that your ideal? Well, if that is so, I wouldn't even call it an ideal. It's just an ambition. But an ideal is to grow towards a higher level of life and living. So 99.9% of humanity doesn't have an ideal. It goes in mass. What's the present trend? The trend is to go to Australia. So the bogie that was going to America suddenly turns to Australia. And hundreds of our young people will go to Australia. There's no ideal. It's just an idea and an ambition given to them. Australia has opened its doors for your earning, go there. But an ideal is one where you say, I want to raise my life to a higher level of consciousness. I want to mend my consciousness, not my jobs. So here, again, there are dozens and dozens of ideas given to us by so many gurus. But most of them take you to some kind of a junction and say, you know, if you follow my ideal, you will reach nirvana. If you follow my ideal, you will reach this mental peace. If you follow my ideal, you will have a healthy body. But these are all substations. But it is Sri Aurobindo who has given the highest ideal. The highest ideal of not only realizing your inner self, but also to change your outer self. That is why we call it an integral ideal. But at least the ideal gives us a clarity of direction. An ideal is like a road map. If you want to go from here to Pondicherry, you should know your road map. You should know which flights go to Pondicherry. If you just open your computer, book a flight, you may be landing up in Germany or in USA or in China. So before you start a journey, you must know the route. And IVL is one that gives you the route of your journey. That's the IVL. And Sri Aurobindo has given us that wonderful map of a spiritual life. He has given you the junctions, the milestones, the difficulties, the rewards, and what you should do when you come to problems. Who is your helper? All the things are given. Like in a map you see where are the hotels, where are the guest houses, which are the sightseeing places. Well, in the western maps you have even the petrol bunks where they are. Everything is clear. Sri Aurobindo has given that. Now the second part of your question, having had the map, am I ready to walk the path? Many people may take that this is the ideal. They even take a few steps. They walk a mile or two, maybe one or two stages. But afterwards, either the vital is not prepared, the physical is not prepared, or the mental is not open, they get kind of, you know, stuck at one place. And they get stuck at one place. They don't evolve much. At the same time, the roadmap is always with them. So whenever somebody says, and he says, yes, this is the roadmap, this is the idea. So I can speak about Sri Aurobindo, because I have the roadmap of Sri Aurobindo with me. But in my own life, how far have I gone on the path of the roadmap? There are people like Nalini Kanta Gupta, who has started from the Alipur jail and reached the supramental skies because he has trodden the path. He is not a man who just spoke, had a roadmap. He was there with Sri Aurobindo in the Alipur jail. Maybe at that time Sri Aurobindo gave him the first broad outline of the map. And this man said, yes, Sri Aurobindo, I'll follow. He followed not only Sri Aurobindo to Pondicherry, but the path that he has given, he has followed. And the destination that Sri Aurobindo showed as Superman, he reached it. But there may be people like you and me, and especially like me, who have read the 30 volumes of Sri Aurobindo, and perhaps all the 17 volumes of the Mother. So I know the map thoroughly, but it depends how many steps I have taken. That's why we speak about the idea. But the true thing is, there's nothing wrong in that. But sometimes what is wrong is, people don't have the updated copies of the map. They use a map that is 50 years old. So that means an incomplete map, a misunderstood map. So that is where people misinterpret Sri Aurobindo. They don't understand fully. But it's only after reading the 30 volume that you begin to understand. But some people read Basis of Yoga, a few chapters on Synthesis of Yoga, and then they start telling, you know, I know the map of Sri Aurobindo's path. That's what is wrong. So we do any yeoman service is only this, that I clear the map, but I don't claim that I've gone 50 miles or 100 miles or 1,000 miles. In fact, I can't even know how many steps I've taken on this path. But this much I am confident, that working constantly for the Mother and the Mother alone, I am sure my inner being has trodden many steps. I don't want to count them because it's not my business to count them. Because the one who is leading the path is she, and it is her hand that I am holding. So why should I count how many steps I am taking? Does the child who is walking with the help of the hand of the mother, does he count his steps? He keeps walking. And he keeps walking. And one day he starts running. So are we. The only thing is, I must take care that my hand does not leave the mother's hand. That's the only effort that we make consciously, constantly to catch her finger. Tarpore unhe jekhane nahi jete chan, joto din lagu, as many births as necessary. If she says, Ananda, not this life, but I'll take 5 lives, ma tumar ichcha. But the only thing is, let me catch your finger. My only prayer is, ma, let me not lose your finger. Keep me with you for hundreds of births. I need not reach my destination, super mind or any mind. Nor do I care. My only care and aspiration is to hold her hand. Eta jodi korte pari, well, I do not care about all the questions of about speaking about Sri Aurobindo, taking about the path. But sometimes some people, this itself becomes the path of yoga, if we can take it rightly. Now a man speaks, sitting at this end and speaking to an audience of 152 people, can get a bloody big loaded ego. And I roam the world over. And I can get applauses from Russia to America, from Germany to Italy to India to Pondicherry, to southern Pondicherry. But if I think that I am the bloody great speaker on Sri Aurobindo, you know my next step is going to be a pitfall. So even in speaking about the Lord's great map, one has got to be extremely careful. Because what I am doing now is the most risky thing. Because I can have a tremendous ego that I know Sri Aurobindo. There couldn't be anything farther from this truth. So you see, dear friend, we speak about Sri Aurobindo, but we have to be extremely conscious that we are not the speakers. We have to really pray to her that, Ma, let not my ego bloat. May you speak through my mouth. May you speak through my heart. May you speak through my mind. So this becomes a path of sadhana for us. I am here doing this work for the past 15 years. Yes, I remember some of those moments when I felt, wow, how well I spoke today. But I know next minute the slap was on my back. And there have been moments when I know 100% that for the whole 1.5 hours, Anand Reddy was nowhere. Those have been extremely inspired speeches where I was not there. And one of those, very humbly I can say, was that my friend Sanjay was sitting there at Chandanagar when I visited them last time in December. I gave them a talk on who is the mother. That was one of those moments when I was hijacked, and I can swear there's nothing of mine there. So there are moments when we know that the mother speaks through and through. There are moments when the mind and the mother come together. There are moments when the ego is there. So all these are not going beyond my ken of analysis. We have to be always careful. Apnar amake dekhe samman den, the end of my lectures, these lectures, all these things, they are just on the card. Amar naam dekhi okane Anand Reddy. Yesterday I was telling my friend, don't even call me Dr. Anand Reddy because I don't know who the doctor is. These are all useless names, doctors and professors and all that. Simply Ananda is the best thing. So friends, we have to be very careful. So there is nothing wrong in claiming to be Aurobindonians and yet not being able to practice. Because we cannot even say that you are not practicing Sri Aurobindo's yoga. Because what you are doing within, I don't know. Because I don't know what is being done within myself. So how can I tell about you? মা তোমার ভিতরে কাজ করছে, কত কাজ করছে, কেন কাজ করছেন, কি প্রিপেয়ার করছেন উনি জানেন। Because when will the egg hatch? 21 days, 21 years, 9 months. When the egg is ready, it hatches. But for getting ready, it has to prepare. The chicken inside is being prepared, nobody knows. Bari theke keu bolte pare na whether the chicken is ready or not. But when the first prick comes, when the first thing comes, and then the nose comes out, it says, yeah, the chicken is coming out. So, any correct jodi to judge another person saying, he is not growing, can we say, is he growing, can we say, he is doing sadhana, I would forbid myself from judging, because I don't know myself. So, these are all things that we come into sadhana. This is the way that we can have an ideal, we should have an ideal. And if you have the ideal of Sri Aurobindo, well, you are fortunate, because you have the map of the world, not just map of your country. Right, thank you.